Chapter 15. Judith was kneeling in the rose garden, her lap full of blossoms. Gavin had been gone a month now, with no word for the last 10 days. There wasn't a moment that she didn't glance out a window or through a doorway to see if a messenger had arrived. She swayed between wanting to see him and dreading his return. He had too much hold over her, as he'd proven when she'd gone to his room the night before he left to fight for her lands. Yet she knew well enough that he had no such ambiguous feelings toward her. For him, only the blonde Alice existed. His wife was only a toy to be used when he needed amusement. She heard the clatter of arms as the men rode through the double gate that separated the inner bailey from the outer. She stood quickly, the roses falling to her feet as she picked up her skirts and began to run. None of them was Gavin. Judith released her pent-up breath, lowered her skirts, and walked more sedately. John Bassett sat atop his war horse, looking many years older than he had when he left some weeks before. His hair, graying at the temples, was even whiter now. His eyes were sunken, dark circles under them. The side of his chainmail had been torn, and the edges of the cut were rusted from blood. The other men were no better, their faces haggard, their clothes torn and filthy. Judith stood silently while John dismounted. "Take the horses," she said to a stable boy. "See that they are cared for." John looked down at her a moment, then, with resignation, started to kneel to kiss her hand. "No," Judith said quickly. She was too practical to allow him to waste more energy in what, to her, was a useless gesture. She put her arm about his waist, guided his arm about her shoulders. John stiffened, taken aback by the familiarity of his little mistress. Then he smiled fondly at the top of her head.
"Come and sit by the fountain,"
she said as she led him to the tiled pool just inside the garden wall.
"Joan," she commanded, "bring some of the other maids and send someone from the kitchen with food and wine."
"Yes, my lady."
She turned back to John.
"I'll help you remove your armor," she said before he could protest.
Women came from inside the castle, and soon the four men were bared from the waist up, their armor sent for repair. Each man ate ravenously of hot bowls of thick stew.
"You don't ask me the news," John said between bites, his elbow raised so Judith could clean and bandage the wound in his side.
"You will tell me," she said. "If it were good, my husband would have returned also. I can wait a long time for bad news."
John set the bowl down and looked at her.
"Is he dead?"
she asked, not looking up at him.
"I don't know," he said quietly. "We were betrayed."
"Betrayed?"
she cried, apologizing when she realized she'd hurt John's wound.
"One of the garrison knights, a new man named Bowen, slipped through the night to tell de Mari that Lord Gavin planned to ride to his brother for help at dawn. Lord Gavin hadn't gone far when he was overtaken."
"But he was not killed,"
Judith whispered.
"I don't believe so. We found no body," John said harshly, returning to his food. "Two of the men who rode with my lord were killed. Killed in such a way that it lies heavy on me. This is no ordinary man we'd deal with, but a devil."
"Was there no ransom message, or any word that they held him prisoner?"
"No, nothing. The four of us must have gotten there moments after the battle. There were some of Damari's men still there. We fought them."
She tied the last knot on the bandage, then looked up at him.
"Where are the other men? There couldn't be only four left."
"They still camp outside Damari's walls. We go to fetch Lord Miles and his men. Lord Rain's leg wouldn't have had time to heal."
"And do you think Miles will be able to free Gavin?"
John didn't answer, but concentrated on the stew.
"Come, you can tell me the truth."
He looked at her.
"It's a strong castle. It can be taken without reinforcements only if we lay siege."
"But that would take months."
"Yes, my lady."
"And what of Gavin and my mother, who are held prisoner there? Wouldn't they be the first to starve if the food were gone?"
John stared at his bowl. Judith stood, her fists clenched, her nails digging into her palms.
"There is another way,"
she said evenly.
"I will go to Walter de Mari."
John's head shot up, one eyebrow raised.
"And what can you do that men cannot?" he asked cynically.
"Anything that is required of me,"
Judith answered quietly. John nearly threw his bowl. Instead, he grabbed her arm, his strong hand hurting her.
"No, You don't know what you're saying. Do you think we deal with a sane man? Do you think he will free Lord Gavin and your mother if you were to give him what he wants? If you saw the men, what were once men, he added, who rode with Lord Gavin, you wouldn't consider giving yourself to this Damari. There was no need for such torture, yet he seemed to do it for joy alone. If he were a man, I would consider your idea, but he isn't.
She shook her arm until John released it.
What else is there to do? A siege would most certainly cause their deaths, but you say a siege is the only way to attack. If I were to get inside the castle, perhaps I could find Gavin and my mother and arrange an escape for them.
An escape? He snorted.
John had forgotten that she was the Lady Judith and had the authority to order him about. She was just a young and inexperienced girl now.
And how would you get out? There are only two entrances, both guarded well.
Judith squared her shoulders, her chin held high.
What choice do you have? If Miles were to lead an attack, Damari would surely put Gavin to death as well as my mother. Do you love Gavin so little that you don't care whether he dies or not?
Suddenly John knew she was right. And he knew that he would be the one to turn her over to Walter Damari's bloody hands. She had struck John's heart when she mentioned love for Lord Gavin. John couldn't love the young man more if he were his own son. She was right that there was a chance to save Lord Gavin if she surrendered herself. Lord Gavin might have him hanged for endangering Judith, but he knew he was going to obey her.
You are trying for martyrdom, John said quietly. What is to keep Damari from killing you also?
Judith smiled at him, put her hands on his shoulder, for she also knew she'd won.
If he killed me, he would lose the Revadune lands. If I have learned nothing else, I know how much men will do for my property.
Her eyes glinted for a moment.
Now come inside, where we may talk more freely. You and I have a great deal of planning to do.
He followed her dumbly. She acted as if they prepared the menu for a woodland picnic, rather than gave herself, as a lamb to slaughter, to a butcher. Judith wanted to leave immediately, but John persuaded her to wait and give him and his men some rest. Truthfully, he hoped to talk her out of her madness and to find an alternate plan, but her logic bewildered him. For every reason he gave that she should not go, Judith gave 10 more sensible ones why she should. And he agreed with her. He could see no other way of any chance of saving the prisoners, if they were prisoners. But oh, how he dreaded Lord Gavin's wrath. He said as much to Lady Judith. She laughed.
If he is safe enough to indulge his anger, I will kiss his hand in thanksgiving.
John shook his head in wonder. The woman was too clever by half again. He didn't envy Lord Gavin the taming of her. They couldn't take many men as a guard. They could not leave the estate unprotected, and already many of Gavin's knights waited for him. They were thankful it was only 2 days' travel to Damari's property. Judith worked hard while John rested and ate. She ordered the loading of several wagons of grain and preserved meats to be prepared at the campsite. Another cart was given over to her clothes, the most beautiful of silks, velvets, brocades, cashmeres, along with a large iron-bound chest filled with jewels. When John mumbled something about women being ostentatious, Judith took him to task.
Walter Damari hungers for some woman he believes to be beautiful. Would you like me to appear before him in homespun?
He would say he'd changed his mind and have me thrown to the bottom of a well. He must be a vain man, or he wouldn't demand that a woman he hardly knows repudiate her husband and claim him as her true love.
Therefore, I will play to his vanity and wear my most exquisite clothes for him.
John stared at her a moment, then turned away. He didn't know whether to praise her or be angry at himself for not thinking of what she said first. For all the facade she showed to the world, Judith was scared. But for the life of her, she couldn't think of any alternative plan. She lay awake all night thinking. Damari had sent no message of exchange. Perhaps he had already killed Gavin and Helen, and Judith was turning herself over to him for no reason. She ran her hands over her stomach, knew it was still hard and flat. She was sure now that she carried Gavin's child. Was the baby part of the reason she worked to save her husband? When the sun rose, Judith dressed slowly in a practical wool gown. She was strangely sedate, almost as if she walked to certain death. She went below to the little chapel for Mass. She would pray for all of them, her husband, her mother, and her unborn child. Walter de Mari sat before a wooden table in the great hall of his father's estate. Once the table had been a finely carved piece, but over time most of the heads of the beasts had been broken away, the necks rubbed smooth. Absently, Walter kicked at a chicken that pecked at the hose on his short, thin legs. He studied the parchment in front of him and refused to look at his surroundings. His father refused to give him anything but this run-down, neglected old tower. Walter buried his resentment deeply and concentrated on the task before him. When he was wed to the heiress to the Revidun lands, then his father wouldn't dismiss him as if he didn't exist. Behind Walter stood Arthur Smyton, a man Walter considered his friend. Arthur had helped Walter at every turn, agreeing that Walter should have had the lovely heiress instead of Gavin Montgomery. To repay Arthur for his loyalty, Walter had made the man his chief vassal. It was Arthur who had succeeded in capturing Lord Gavin.
"Arthur," de Mari complained, "I don't know how to word the message. What if she won't come? If she does hate her husband, why should she risk so much for him?"
Arthur didn't let his emotions show.
"Do you forget the old woman we hold? Isn't she the girl's mother?"
"Yes,"
Walter said, and returned his attention to the parchment before him. It wasn't easy asking what he did. He wanted marriage to the Lady Judith in exchange for the freedom of her husband and mother. Arthur stood behind Walter for a moment, then moved away to pour himself a cup of wine. He needed a firm stomach to be able to withstand Walter's mewling. The lovesick young man made Arthur ill. Walter had come back from the Montgomery Revidun wedding so enthralled with the bride that he'd hardly been able to do anything except talk of her. Arthur looked on him with disgust. Walter had everything: lands, wealth, a family, hope for the future. He was not like Arthur, who had pulled himself up from the muck that had been his family. Anything he had, he'd acquired through intelligence, physical strength, and quite often treachery and lying. There was nothing that he wouldn't do to get what he wanted. When he'd seen the spineless Walter mooning about a bit of a girl, Arthur developed a plan. It hadn't taken long to learn of the quarrels the new bride had with her husband. Arthur, only a knight in Walter's garrison, had found a ready ear when he spoke of an annulment and a second marriage to Walter. Arthur couldn't have cared less about the girl, but the Revidun lands were worth any amount of fighting. Walter hadn't wanted to attack Robert Revidun, but Arthur knew Revidun would stop at nothing to keep his daughter wed to the Montgomery family. It had been easy to kill the old man once he allowed them, as friends, inside his castle walls. His wife Helen had followed docilely, and Arthur laughed, recognizing a well-trained woman when he saw one. He admired Revidun for that.
"My lord,"
a nervous servant announced,
"there are visitors outside."
"Visitors?" Walter asked, his eyes hazy.
"Yes, my lord. It is the Lady Judith Montgomery, surrounded by her men-at-arms."
Walter jumped up, the writing table upset, as he started after the servant. Arthur grabbed his arm.
"I pray you, my lord, take care. Perhaps it's a trap."
Walter's eyes burned.
"What trap could there be? The men won't fight and endanger their lady."
"Perhaps the lady herself."
Walter jerked away from him.
"You go too far. Be careful you don't find yourself in the cellar with Lord Gavin."
Stormily, he left the old tower, kicking sawdust-dry rushes out of his way. Arthur's word of caution had penetrated his brain, and now he ran up the narrow stone stairs to the top of the wall in order to be sure it was indeed the Lady Judith who waited below. There was no mistaking her. The auburn hair that flowed down her back was not to be confused with anyone else's.
"It is she,"
he whispered excitedly, then seemingly flew down the stairs across the bailey to the front gate.
"Open it, man," he bellowed to the gatekeeper, "and be quick about it."
The heavy iron-tipped portcullis was drawn upward slowly, Walter waiting impatiently.
"My lord," Arthur said at his side, "you can't let her bring her men inside. There are over 100 of them. We could be attacked from within."
Walter turned his eyes away from the gate that creaked in protest as it rose. He knew Arthur was right, yet he wasn't sure what else to do. Arthur fixed the weak blue eyes with his own dark ones.
I will ride out to meet her. You can't be risked. I will ride no farther than the range of the crossbowmen. When I'm sure it is the Lady Judith, my men and I will escort her through the gate.
Alone? Walter asked eagerly.
She may have a personal guard, if she so insists, but none other. We cannot allow her whole garrison to enter, he repeated.
The portcullis was up, the drawbridge down as Arthur mounted his horse and rode out, followed by five other knights.
Judith sat very still on her mount as she watched the raising of the gate. It took every ounce of her courage not to turn away. The old castle might be crumbling in places, but it looked very formidable when she was so close to it. She felt as if it was about to swallow her.
There is time yet to leave, my lady,
John Bassett observed as he leaned forward. Six men were riding toward her, and she very much wanted to turn away. Then her stomach turned over and she had to swallow a sudden attack of nausea. Her child was reminding her of its presence. The baby's father and grandmother were inside those old walls, and if she could, she was going to get them out.
No,
she said to John with more strength than she actually felt.
I must attempt the task.
When the leader of the approaching men was close to Judith, she knew at once that he was the instigator of the whole plot. She remembered Walter as mild and meek, but this man's mocking, dark eyes showed no weakness. His clothes flashed with jewels, every color, every variety and size. His dark hair was covered by a small velvet cap, whose wide band on it held at least 100 jewels. It looked almost like a crown.
My lady,
he said, bowing as he sat atop his horse. His smile was mocking, almost insulting. Judith stared at him, her heart beating quickly. There was a coldness in his eyes that frightened her. He would not be one to easily overrule.
I am Sir Arthur Smyton, chief vassal to Lord Walter de Mare. He bids you welcome.
Welcome, Judith thought, controlling herself not to spit the word at him, thinking of her father butchered, her husband and mother held captive, several lives already lost. She inclined her head toward him.
You hold my mother captive.
He looked at her speculatively, as if he tried to take her measure. She'd been sent no message, yet she knew what was needed.
Yes, my lady.
Then I will go to her.
Judith urged her horse forward, but Arthur grabbed the bridle. To a man, the 100 knights who surrounded Judith drew their swords. Arthur didn't lose his smile.
You can't think to enter our gates with so many men.
You would have me go alone,
she asked, aghast. It was what she'd expected, but perhaps she could persuade Smyton to allow some of her men to accompany her.
You would perhaps have me leave my maid behind, or my personal guard.
He watched her intently.
One man, one woman, no more.
She nodded, knowing it was no use to argue. At least John Bassett would be with her.
Joan,
she called as she turned and saw the girl eyeing Arthur speculatively.
Prepare the cart with my goods and follow me.
John, she turned and saw that he was already giving orders for the establishment of a camp outside the castle walls. Judith rode across the drawbridge, under the arched stone gate, with her back straight. She wondered if she would ever leave the walls alive. Walter de Mare stood waiting to help her dismount. She remembered him as a gentle young man, neither handsome nor ugly. But now his blue eyes showed weakness. His nose was too big, and his thin lips looked cruel. He stared at her.
You are even more beautiful than I remembered.
She had dressed carefully that morning. A band of pearls encircled her head. Close to her body, she wore a red silk petticoat with a wide border of white fur. Her gown was of maroon velvet, the hem embroidered with gold scrollwork. The sleeves were tight, except at the shoulder, where the velvet was slit and the red silk pulled through. The neck was cut deep, her breasts swelling above the fabric. When she walked, she lifted the velvet overskirt and exposed the fur-trimmed silk beneath. Judith managed to smile at this man of treachery, even as she twisted away from the hands about her waist.
You flatter me, my lord,
she said while looking at him through her lashes. Walter was enchanted.
You must be tired and in need of refreshment. We would have had food prepared, but you weren't expected.
Judith didn't want him to think about why she came without a request. As she watched Walter's adoring look, she knew she would do well in establishing herself to be a shy young woman, the bashful bride.
Please,
she said, her head bowed.
I would like to see my mother.
Walter didn't answer but continued staring at her, her thick lashes touching her soft cheek, the pearls on her forehead echoing the creaminess of her skin. John Bassett stepped forward, his jaw rigid. He was a big man, as tall as Gavin, but heavier with age. The steel gray of his hair only emphasized the hardness of his body.
The lady wishes to see her mother, he said sternly.
His voice was even, but it radiated power. Walter hardly noticed John. He was too enraptured with Judith. But Arthur was very aware of him and recognized danger. John Bassett would need to be disposed immediately. Given the freedom of the castle, such a man could cause much trouble.
Of course, my lady,
Walter said, holding his arm out to her. One would have thought her visit was one of pleasure. They made their way to the second floor entrance of the tower. For in time of battle, the wooden steps were cut away to make the entrance several feet from the ground. Judith studied the interior as they walked across the great hall toward the stone steps. It was a filthy place, littered with bits of bone among the dry rushes on the floor. Dogs lazily nosed about the refuse. The deeply recessed windows had no wooden shutters, and in places the stones had fallen away because the chinking was crumbling. She wondered if such a poor structure was indicative of the guardianship of the place. She meant to find out. Helen sat in a chair in a little room cut into the thick stone walls on the third floor. Charcoal burned in a brass brazier. The tower had been built before fireplaces were known.
Mother,
Judith whispered and ran forward to place her head against her mother's knees.
My daughter,
Helen gasped, then pulled Judith into her arms. It was a while before their tears quieted enough so they could speak.
You are well?
Judith nodded, then looked past her mother to the men who stood there.
Are we to have no privacy?
Of course,
Walter said, then turned toward the door.
You will leave also, he said to John Bassett. No, I will not leave my lady alone.
Walter frowned, but he didn't want to upset Judith in any way.
You should have left with them,
Judith said sternly when Walter and Arthur were gone. John sat heavily in a chair by the charcoal brazier.
I will not leave you alone.
But I wish for some privacy with my mother.
John neither spoke nor looked at her.
He is a stubborn man, Judith said disgustedly to Helen.
Is it stubborn when I don't let you have your way at all times? He asked. You are stubborn enough to rival a bull.
Judith opened her mouth to speak, but Helen's laugh stopped her.
You are indeed well, my daughter.
She turned to John.
Judith is all I have ever wanted her to be, and more,
she said fondly, stroking her daughter's hair.
Now tell me why you are here. Oh, mother,
she began, tears starting in her eyes again.
What is it? You can speak freely.
No, I cannot,
she said passionately as she looked over at John so close by. John gave her a look of such blackness that she was almost afraid of him.
Do not doubt my honesty. Talk to your mother. No word of what I hear will be repeated.
Knowing she could trust him, Judith relaxed as she sat on a cushion at her mother's feet. She wanted to talk, desperately needed to talk.
I have broken a vow to God,
she said softly. Helen's hand paused for a moment on her daughter's head.
Tell me of it,
she whispered. The words tumbled over themselves, trying to escape. Judith told how she had tried again and again for some degree of love in her marriage, yet she had been thwarted at every effort. Nothing she did could loosen the hold Alice Chatworth had over Gavin.
And your vow?
Helen asked.
I vowed I would give nothing to him that he did not take, but I freely went to him the night before he came here.
She blushed, thinking of that night of love, Gavin's hands and lips on her body.
Judith, do you love him?
I don't know. I hate him, I love him, I despise him, I adore him. I don't know. He is so big, there is so much of him, that he devours me. I am always aware of him. When he enters a room, he fills it. Even when I hate him the most, when I see him holding another woman or reading a letter from her, I cannot rid myself of him. Is this love?
She asked as she gazed beseechingly up at her mother.
Is it love or merely possession by the devil?
He is not kind to me. I'm sure he has no love for me. He has even told me so.
The only place he is good to me is...
In bed, Helen smiled.
Yes,
Judith said and looked away, her cheeks red. It was several moments before Helen replied.
You ask me of love. Who knows less of it than I?
Your father also had such a hold on me. Did you know that one time I saved his life?
The night before he had beaten me, and the next morning as I rode out with him, my eye was black and swollen. We rode along, away from the escort, and Robert's horse bolted and threw him. He fell into the swamp along the north edge of one of the estates. The more he moved, the deeper he sank. My whole body ached from his beating, and my first thought was to ride away and let him die. But I couldn't.
Do you know he laughed at me, called me a fool when I'd saved him? She paused a moment.
I tell you this to show you that I understand the way he has a hold on you. So did my husband. I know the power Gavin has over you for my own marriage was the same. I can't say it was love. And I can't say yours is.
They sat quietly for a moment, both staring at the glowing charcoal.
And now I rescue my husband as you rescued yours,
Judith said.
Even though yours lived to beat you again, and mine will return to another woman. Yes,
Helen said sadly.
Did having a child matter?
Helen considered.
Perhaps if the first ones had lived, but there were three dead, all boys. Then when you came and you were a girl...
She didn't finish the sentence.
Do you think it would have mattered had the first one lived and been a son?
Judith persisted.
I don't know. I don't believe he beat his first wife, who gave him sons. But he was younger then.
She stopped abruptly.
Judith, are you with child? Yes. 2 months gone.
John jumped to his feet in a clatter of armor and steel sword against stone. You have ridden all this way and you are with child, he demanded. He had been so quiet the two women had forgotten his presence. He put his hand to his forehead.
Hanging will be too good for me. Lord Gavin will torture me, as well I deserve when he hears of this.
Judith was on her feet instantly, gold eyes blazing.
And who will tell him? You are sworn to secrecy.
How do you plan to keep this a secret?
He asked with heavy sarcasm.
When it must be known, I plan to be far away from this place.
Her eyes softened.
You wouldn't tell, would you, John?
His expression didn't change.
Don't try such cajolery on me. Save it for that fish of a man, Walter de Mare.
Helen's laugh interrupted them. It was good to hear her laugh, a sound too seldom heard in her unhappy life.
It does me good to see you like this, my daughter. I was afraid marriage might tame you and break your spirit.
Judith wasn't listening. John had heard too much. She had said too many intimate things in his hearing. Now her cheeks were beginning to stain red.
No, John said with a sigh. It would take more than a mere man to tame this one. Don't plead more, child. I will say nothing of what I have heard unless you ask me to.
Not even to Gavin?
He gave her a worried look.
I haven't seen him yet. I would give a great deal to know where he is being held, if he is well.
Judith,
Helen said, bringing their attention back to her.
You have yet to tell me why you are here. Did Walter de Mare send for you?
John sat down heavily in the chair.
We are here because the Lady Judith said we must come. She does not listen to reason.
There was no other way,
Judith said as she too sat down again.
What have they told you?
She asked her mother.
Nothing. I was brought here after Robert's death. I have spoken to no one for a week. Even the maid who empties the chamber pot doesn't speak to me. Then you don't know where Gavin is kept? No. I gathered from your words only just now that he too was held. What does Lord de Mare hope to gain?
Me,
Judith said simply, then lowered her eyes before briefly explaining Walter's plan of annulment.
But there can be no annulment if you carry Gavin's child.
Yes,
Judith said as she looked across her mother to John.
That is one reason it must be kept secret. Judith, what will you do? How do you expect to save yourself, Gavin, Joan, and your husband's man from this place? You are no foil for stone walls.
John grunted in agreement.
I don't know,
Judith answered exasperatedly.
I could see no alternative. At least now I have a chance of getting you out. But first I must find Gavin. Only then. Did you bring Joan?
Helen interrupted.
Yes,
Judith said, knowing her mother had some idea.
Tell Joan to find Gavin. If there is a man to find, she can do it. She's little more than a bitch in heat.
Judith nodded.
And now, what of Walter DeMare?
Helen continued.
I have seen him only a few times. Is he to be trusted?
No, John said. Neither he nor that henchman of his can be trusted.
Judith ignored him.
DeMare thinks I am beautiful, and I plan to be beautiful as long as it takes to find Gavin and make an escape.
Helen looked down at her daughter, so lovely in the glow of the coals.
You know so little of men,
she observed.
Men are not like account books where you add the figures and they give you a manageable sum. They are all different, and much more powerful than you or I.
Suddenly John rose and looked toward the door. They return.
Judith, listen to me,
Helen said quickly.
Ask Joan how to deal with Walter. She knows a great deal about men. Promise me you will follow her advice and don't let your own thoughts sway you. I promise me,
Helen demanded, her hands holding her daughter's head.
I will do my best. It is all I can promise. Then that must do.
The door burst open and no more words were spoken. Joan and one of the castle maids came to fetch Judith so that she might prepare for supper with his lordship. She hastily bid her mother goodbye, then followed the women, John close behind them. The fourth floor contained the ladies' solar, a large airy room freshly cleaned with new rushes on the floor, new whitewash on the stones, almost as if a guest had been expected. Judith was left alone with her maid, John outside, guarding the door. At least Walter trusted her enough not to assign a spy to her. Joan brought a basin of heated water to her mistress. As Judith washed her face and hands, she looked at Joan.
Do you know where Lord Gavin is kept? No, my lady,
Joan said suspiciously. She was not used to being asked questions by her mistress.
Could you find out where he is?
Joan smiled.
I am sure I could. This is a place full of gossip mongers.
Will you need silver to get this information?
Joan was shocked.
No, my lady. I will but ask the men.
And they will tell you just because you asked.
Joan was gaining confidence. Her lovely mistress knew little beyond running estates and keeping accounts.
It matters much how a man is asked.
Judith wore a dress of silver tissue. The skirt parted in front to reveal a wide expanse of deep green satin. The sleeves were large and bell-shaped, draping gracefully from wrist to halfway down the skirt. The sleeves were lined with more green satin. Her hair was covered with a matching French hood, embroidered with silver fleur-de-lis. Judith sat down on a stool while Joan arranged the hood.
What if a woman wanted to ask something of Lord Walter?
Him,
Joan said heatedly.
I would not trust him, though that Sir Arthur who dogs him is not ill-favored.
Judith whirled to face her maid.
How can you say that? Arthur has such hard eyes. Anyone can see he is a greedy man.
Lord Walter is not the same.
Joan pushed her mistress's head back around. She was feeling rather superior at the moment.
He is just as greedy, treacherous, brutal, and selfish. He is all of those and more.
Then why?
Because he is always the same. A woman would know what to expect from him, and that would be whatever suited his needs best. You could deal with that.
Then Lord Walter is not the same.
No, my lady. Lord Walter is a child, yet a man. He changes with the wind. He will want a thing, then when he has it. He won't want it any more.
And this would pertain to women also.
Joan dropped to her knees before her mistress.
You must hear me, and listen well. I know men as I know nothing else in this world. Lord Walter burns for you now. He is mad with desire, and as long as he keeps that rage inside him, you will be safe.
Safe? I don't understand.
He has killed your father and taken your mother and your husband as prisoners only because of this passion of his. What do you think would become of all of you were this fire to be doused?
Judith still didn't understand. When she and Gavin made love, no fires were quenched for longer than a few moments. In truth, the more time she spent in his bed, the more she wanted him. Joan began to talk with exaggerated patience.
All men are not as Lord Gavin, she said, reading Judith's mind. If you were to give yourself to Lord Walter, you would have no more hold over him.
To men such as him,
The game is everything.
Judith was beginning to understand.
How can I keep him from me?
She was fully prepared to give herself to 100 men if it would save the lives of those she cared for.
He will not force you. He must believe that he has wooed you and won.
You may ask a lot of him and he will give it gladly, but you must be clever about it. He will be jealous. Do not hint that you care for Lord Gavin. Let him think you despise the man.
Hold the carrot before his nose, but don't allow him to nibble.
Joan rose from her knees and gave a final critical look to her mistress's gown.
And what of Sir Arthur?
Judith asked. Lord Walter will rule him, and if worse comes to worst, he can be bought. Judith rose and stared at her maid.
Do you think I will ever learn so much about men?
Only when I learn to read, Joan said, then laughed at the impossibility of such a statement. Why do you need to know of many men when you have Lord Gavin?
He is worth all my men together.
As they left the chamber to descend the stairs to the great hall, Judith thought,
Do I have Gavin? Do I want him?